Hello, and welcome to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur, where Hayut Yogev speaks with entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs about reaching or missing the critical point of approaching the right customer with the right message at the right time and place. The point where business success starts. And here is your host, Hayut Yogev.
Rich or Miss, Episode 46. Aman Advani is co-founder and CEO of Ministry of Supply, a clothing brand inventing a new category, Performance Professional, Performance Dress Clothers. The company was founded in 2012 with the mission of incorporate fundamental engineering and performance principles into dress clothing staples, ultimately building a wardrobe that both looks good and feels comfortable. Think Nike meets Brooks Brothers. Prior to co-founding Ministry of Supply, Advani spent 4 years in management and non-profit consulting with Deloitte and Technoserve. He holds a BSIE from Georgia Tech and half an MBA from MIT Sloan School of Management, and was a member of Forbes 30 Under 30 list. Aman Advani, what a pleasure to have you here with us. Hi.
Hello, thanks so much for having me.
It's great having you, and I just shared with our audience what have you been doing until now, and I would like you to share with us, what are you most passionate about today, and where are you heading?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think passion is such a good place to start in this conversation. So we started our company, Ministry of Supply. It's been a little over 5 years now, and really the mission hasn't changed the whole time. And it's about, you know, on a shallower sense, about making great clothing, you know, comfortable, highly engineered dress clothes that you look forward to wearing. But on a deeper level for us, the passion is really about kind of how that might impact or improve someone's life. So whether it be somebody not having to go, you know, iron every morning and get 15 or 20 minutes back, this morning got to spend an extra 20 minutes with my son, who's you know, 3 months old, instead of ironing my clothes, right? So it's those small moments, I think, that we live for in terms of kind of what do you get to do if we can give you time and kind of peace of mind back through highly engineered, really comfortable clothing.
Sounds great. Can you tell us a bit about this invention of the non-ironing issue?
Yeah. So, you know, for us, it's actually more than just the invention of kind of non-ironing. I think we kind of internally often refer to it as inventing clothing as a whole, right? So we've taken an engineering approach to clothing, right? So how can you think of clothing in the same way you might think of gadgets or, you know, more highly engineered items? And so for us, we start with the customer and figure out what are the pain points that customers have with their clothing today. Is it that they don't like dry cleaners, they don't like ironing, they don't like stiff clothing, they don't like sweat stains, they don't like fabrics that aren't soft. And so if we can think about all these things, for us, that's really what it is. It's not just inventing one particular feature, it's inventing an entirely new wardrobe that you genuinely want to wear, look forward to wearing.
And how did you come to it? I mean, how does a person just get up in the morning and say, wow, I'm going to make a suit or a clothing like a mobile phone? How did it happen?
It's such a good question. We really enjoy talking about this because it's for us been such a special story of personal passion. And this is your first question, right? Was why did we even start this in the first place? And for us, you know, I as a consultant for 4 years, getting up every morning and, you know, on Mondays, getting on a plane, flying to a client site, putting on a really stiff set of, you know, what we called business casual. And I couldn't wait at the end of the day to take it off and put on my, you know, Nike gym clothes. And so for me, it was born out of sheer necessity. And my partner, Gihan, has the exact same story. We both then, you know, realized these situations weren't ones that we enjoyed or would bear. And so we actually both started cutting up our own running gear, our own gym clothes, and sewing them into dress clothes. So I would cut up running socks and sew them into the soles of dress socks. And so it wasn't that we woke up one morning and said, let's start a company. I think we woke up one morning and said, let's engineer, you know, personal samples that would help us, you know, enjoy our day more. And that kind of one thing led to another. And we met each other probably a year into our creative processes individually. We met each other and said, wait, we should just do this together. We're after the same thing. And then, you know, we never looked back.
And it just started because you weren't comfortable with the closes?
Yeah, it was more than uncomfortable. It was that I kind of dreaded. It was emotional and physical, right? I know it sounds a little bit exaggerative, but you know, Sunday night when you're packing your bag for a 4-day consulting trip every week, and you're carefully folding everything, knowing that either way you're going to have to, you know, iron it when you get there. You know, you're going to the dry cleaners to pick up all your clothes. You know, you're at a client site doing a presentation and you're worried about sweat stains, you know, some of the things that no one really likes to talk about, but it was just these clothing. And then on the other side, I would get back to the hotel lobby and keep working every night, you know, like many consultants do. And I was wearing gym clothes and a hoodie and sweatpants or a t-shirt and gym shorts. And it felt great. And I looked forward to it. And I felt more productive and comfortable in my own skin. And so I think that was the intent for us, was how do we replicate the comfort, you know, the engineering that has hit the performance industry? How do we bring that into, you know, the rest of our day?
It's fantastic. It's a great story and it sounds great. I would like to ask you, who do you consider to be your customers? Who are your customers and how did you come out to the decision that these are the customers that you are going to focus on?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So, you know, when we decided to figure out who is this product for, and you know, let's make sure we build it for this person and build it around them, we started off thinking that this was a demographic, an age, an income level, or a marital status. But what we found out was that the better way to tie our customer base together, who this product was really, you know, hitting and who was excited about the product. And we found out that it was much easier to design and center our company around a psychographic, how someone thinks, how they act. And so what we found out is that our customer, you know, who this product really resonated with and who we would build this product for, was someone who was highly intentional, very discerning, very thoughtful and educated. They really thought about their products and what went into them and how it might impact their life. They tended to be very youthful and kind of interested in progress and, you know, moving forward in life and thinking about productivity and how to change their kind of day. So what we call a very thirsty customer, someone who's always looking to kind of what's next, how do I grow and how do I improve my life? You find these folks that are very balanced, thinking about family, thinking about travel, really excited about their careers. And it was words like these, kind of intentional, discerning, educated, that helped us to identify exactly who we would build this product for in the coming days, weeks, months, and years.
Wow. You know, this podcast is mainly about customer focused. And that's why I liked the answer so much, because it's always, you know, when you come from marketing, you know that you should focus on the customers. But for you, it just came naturally for you too. And it's beautiful. And I want to ask you, do you have any beliefs or concepts regarding approaching your customers? And what is the best advice regarding customers' approach and focus that you can give our listeners, entrepreneurs that start in their way?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll answer that in two parts. I'll share with you our philosophy first, and then I'll turn it into my one piece of advice that I really love to share. And it's one that we've learned several times. So first is kind of our philosophy is we actually have termed it internally. And I think by terming it quantified empathy, it helps us to build a framework around it that we really adhere to. So quantified empathy is a tool set we've built. And it's just like its name. It's kind of rational meets emotional. It's taking the emotion of empathy and rationalizing it into actionable steps to make sure that we're building a product for a specific customer. And so it's these 8 tools. Many of them are proactive. Many of them are reactive. All of them are very quantitative. So we can take the data that comes in from sentiment analysis, from customer feedback, from product reviews, from small group sessions, all of these tools that we bring together to really drive the product roadmap, the product features, the product, even everything down to color, you know, sizes, cuts, everything like that is determined through the quantified empathy formula. Now, if we had to turn that into one small piece of advice, it's that it's a lot easier to build a business based upon what we call market pull than it is on technology push. And that is, I mean, it's probably the essence of what your podcast is meant to convey, is that if you actually listen to that customer and create a product around a challenge or an opportunity for that customer, it's a lot easier to give that product to them and get it in their hands than it is if you start off with a really cool technology and try to figure out where to push it, which is often expensive and exhausting. And so that's what we always say, opt for market pull, not technology push.
I know you've got successes. I've read about some. But I want first to ask you, what is your biggest, most critical failure with customers? The one that affected your entrepreneurial journey the most? Can you share with us this?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's such a great question. You know, I think that really early on, we had, I think, a bit of a, what we say, a guard up. And what that means, and this isn't a specific moment, but I think a section of time for our company early on, where we felt like we were kind of, you know, our name, Ministry of Supply, is actually derived from Q, the character from Bond films.
Okay.
And Q, you know, makes all the gadgetry for Bond, and he's making sure that Bond looks great, but is ready for anything. And so much like Q, who in real life operated under the cover of Ministry of Supply, we felt like we were arming our customers for, you know, everyday battles, right? Getting on the subway, sweating, dry cleaners, iron, stuff like this, that we were kind of making sure that our customer looked great, but was ready for anything.
I love this because I love Q, and I didn't remember it. I didn't remember the phrase, so it's great.
Well, so it's not. I don't think they mentioned it in any of the movies. It's one of these things where if you actually look at the backstory for Q, he's based on a real person named Charles Frazier Smith, and Charles Frazier Smith actually operated under the cover Ministry of Supply. And so, you know, in that way, it's grounded in, you know, we say he's the ultimate empathetic inventor, right? Q is always thinking about what Bond wants. But
right.
Q actually does something really special that I think we missed in the early years was Q involves Bond in the process. Q involves Bond in the design studio. Bond is sitting there really understanding exactly what, you know, helping to drive these factors. It's not an observational style of design. You know, Q is very hands-on in that empathy. And so early on, it was kind of, we felt like we were these scientists who were behind kind of a glass wall designing for a customer that we felt like we understood. And it wasn't until we really left that glass kind of lab and walked out into the real world and spent a lot more time physically face-to-face with customer, field testing products, really developing this quantified empathy toolkit, that our product came to life and really answered the challenge or opportunity that our customer needed or wanted. And so I know that's not quite an answer to your question in a very direct sense of a specific moment, but I would say it was a shift in mindset over the course of the last 5 years, particularly kind of around year two, where we left the labs and entered kind of reality. And we took this engineering process, but we brought humanity into it. And so just like Q confers with Bond constantly, we too would confer with our customer constantly through our quantified empathy toolkit to create true market pull product.
I love this story. I would like you to try and also think of a time that you really failed with a customer. I'm sure you have at least one.
Oh, I would say we have dozens. In fact, if anything, the challenge and the answer is probably that we have too many to choose from, but I'll pick one. In 2012, we launched the company on a platform called Kickstarter. And it was really exciting for us because it was a chance to validate that people cared about what we were doing, that we were on the right track. And we launched this product, and it was called the Apollo dress shirt, and it was a big success kind of on the face. It ended up $429,000 in 30 days with a goal of $30,000. So we ended up breaking the record for largest fashion project on the platform, and it was exciting, and we felt great about it. Now, what we didn't do was execute properly. You know, the shirt was not nearly as attractive as it should have been, right? It was a fairly, I guess we could say now, a bit of an ugly shirt. 5 years later, I can admit that. It was about 2 months late, and not that anyone cared outside of the company, but we also ended up losing money on it, which is kind of our dirty little secret. And so I think we learned a really hard lesson in those first 6 months of being a business of what it meant to really set expectations and over-deliver on them, and that our customers were people who cared about that and wanted to be along for the journey, were forgiving, but at the same time, that expectations and reality should match, or at best, reality should exceed expectations. And that if we were going to set, you know, big goals for this company to really make a product that was 10 times better than what's on the market, not just 10% better, that if we were going to make that promise, we had to go out and execute on it. And so it was a really harsh lesson early on, and really an execution in discipline, and making sure that what we promised came to life in a very, very surgical way.
It's a great story. And now I would like to ask you about a success. Tell us a story of your greatest, most significant success as a result of the right customer focus, or something that you did right about approaching your customers.
Yeah, you know, my gut response when you say biggest success actually leans pretty heavily on internally. When now you qualified it with as it relates to customers. So I'll save that example for later. But I think internally, our greatest success overall, you know, without the prompt,
Just tell
both. Yeah, no, so I'll give you the short answer for the first part, and then I'll answer your question more directly. But I think the greatest success we've built as a company is something that the world doesn't get to see as often, which is a team that we have here, both here based in Boston, but also spread across our stores across the United States. Is a team that is deeply empathetic, deeply, you know, cautious of each other's thoughts, ideas, and feelings, highly respectful. It's a team that gets along and genuinely enjoys being around each other. And I think nailing that culture, one where you look forward to coming into work on Monday, is without a doubt the most impressive thing we've built over the course of the last 5 years. So I know that doesn't directly relate to what you said with customers.
First of all, it does. Not directly, but it does because I'm sure it shows.
It does.
I mean, that's the only way. You can't come to customers with some empathy if you don't have it internally. So I'm sure it shows.
I think that's right. And I think that empathy that is bred here in our company is one that very much carries to the outside world. The customers do actually feel that sense of kind of peace that we have within the company is one that I believe really resonates with our outside customers when they peek in or when they see the product that comes as a result of that process and that culture.
Sure. And the other one?
The other one is honestly, I know I've harped on it a little bit, but the other one that comes to mind when it relates specifically to customers is this framework. I mean, it is a proprietary framework. I'm happy to share it with as many people as want to listen. And maybe we can even find a way after the podcast to really summarize it in a few bullet points. But this idea of quantified empathy for us has really changed our company's kind of trajectory. It's really shifted our ability to create a product that truly answers a customer's need. And does it with our core engineering skills, our backgrounds as quants, people who entered fashion and partnered with some of the best, you know, minds in fashion to do so. But, you know, our founding team is grounded in engineering. Myself and my partner, Gihan, both come from engineering backgrounds. And I think that's where, you know, this idea of applying that mindset through this quantified empathy framework to everything we do, whether it be how we design, make, or sell our product, has really been the greatest success that we've created as kind of a true asset of the company, is this process that relentlessly and repeatedly puts out product that we know will resonate with the core audience.
Can you tell me about some of the results that or the comments that you're hearing?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, I mentioned earlier we have 8 tools. I'll dive into one that answers your question. I think the others would do so as well, but since our inception, we have cataloged every single piece of feedback that's ever come in to the company. Not one piece of feedback that's come in via a store or via an email or via a phone call or chat has been missed. So any material feedback that comes in, that is thousands and thousands of data points over the course of time. I would guess by this point, tens of thousands that have come in over time. And not only do they get cataloged in raw form, but they also get categorized in terms of whether they're positive or negative, which function within our company they affect, which sub-function they affect. So there's a predetermined set of characteristics that we have determined to be important. And then as a result of that, we can pretty quickly, through our quantified empathy kind of toolkit, figure out where the sentiment lies. So for instance, we could tell you how many people got, you know, a hole in their sock in Kansas on a Monday in 2017. Hope or guess would be that number is zero, but we could tell you, because we know exactly what all that customer information is, and we can pull it together. Where that becomes really useful is that if we're, let's say, starting off with a new product or let's say a revision of an existing product, we can precisely identify the opportunities for growth. So if somebody says, hey, let's have, you know, an extra pocket in this jacket and here's where I'd put it, and we've heard that piece of feedback a proportionately high number of times, we know that that's something that we should probably include in the next iteration of the product. And by having this iterative design product process that you see only in an engineering school, not in a fashion school, you know, we come out with a product that is, you know, definitively better than the last generation and definitively better than the market. And that for us is kind of the core of what quantified empathy means, is taking a document like that is just tens of thousands of data points and bringing it into, you know, meaningful insights that drive product development.
I definitely think that this is actually a great success with customers. I'm sure that there are some face-to-face conversations with the customers. However, being really very focused on everything that the customer is going through is, I guess, the highest success. Did you already reached the point where you stopped chasing after customers and started to attract them to you?
Yeah, no, so I really like that question because it kind of puts you in the mindset of kind of hustle, I almost think of the word, as chasing customers. So what we've always said from the start is that we do chase customers. We still continue to chase customers, but we chase them with the mindset of let me tell you what we're doing, not let me sell you our product. And because of that, it kind of blends your question into a bit of a gray area in between to say, we're going to chase you to tell you. And if we tell you, then we will attract you. And that's kind of our core principle, is that we think there is a great market pull for what we're doing. We think that the customer out there genuinely wants this product. And that if we can put it in front of them, which requires us chasing them, right? It is a new concept. It's a new category of clothing entirely. It does require us to go out there and show people what we're doing. It's not something that people are inherently just going to, you know, dream up overnight. But once they know it exists, you know, we use the example that people didn't know they wanted a microwave until they knew it exists. They were fine with the oven. But all of a sudden, the microwave comes around and it plays a certain role in people's lives. And I think in the same way for us, we do want to share with people what we're doing. We think that it's a dramatic improvement on kind of tradition. We say convention meets invention. Yeah. And because of that, we continue to chase people, but at the same time, it's not with the mindset of let me sell you something. It's with the mindset of let me tell you something.
I think when we refer to the chasing versus the attracting, you must always, it doesn't matter which product you are selling, but especially with a startup or something that people are not familiar with, the basic is the awareness. You must tell people about what you have and must find the ways to really put it out there. But the idea of not chasing them is not trying to convince somebody that he needs your product, but find those that it's relevant to and find the way to put it in front of them. It doesn't mean that you have to go one by one, but to put it in the right places and make those customers that really up to the product and really desire the product to find you. That's the idea.
That's exactly right. I think that's really well put.
Can you recommend the best, most effective technological or digital tool that's related to customer focus, marketing, or sales? You know, there are so many tools. Every half a minute, there is a new tool that you can use in regards to approaching customers or to measure or anything else. However, what I'm looking for is not another tool to add to the list, but the tools that really matter to those who succeed.
Yeah, no, it's a really great question. I'm going to give you an answer that I hope or suspect you've never gotten before. My tool that I would give you is actually Excel, Microsoft Excel. And the reason I say that is I think there's some conception, especially early on in a startup, that you need to use some really fancy piece of software that will do all the work for you, that will kind of tell you exactly what you need to do, and that these tools would somehow solve your problems. I think Excel is just it's a blank spreadsheet when you open it up, right? So it really is an opportunity for you to organize your data into actionable insights. And I know that we're coming at this from a kind of an engineering perspective at the same time. Of course, fashion matters more than anything in our business, the art of fashion, right? So we've brought on a design team that is absolutely fantastic and comes from, you know, a deep knowledge of how fashion works and what drives kind of consumer behavior. At the same time, we still today, you know, 5 years in, use a lot of Excel. And I think that sometimes as a customer insight tool specifically, that we don't need to rely upon complex software. What we need to rely upon is a time-tested truth of if you can organize customer sentiment in a way that you can interpret. And for us, that's often in Excel. If you can organize customer behavior, customer sentiment, customer buying patterns, behaviors into any format that you can act upon, then it doesn't really matter what the tool is so much as your ability to act on it. And so for us, then let's just lean on the most basic, you know, quantitative tool out there to turn those soft data points into hard actionable items. We use a lot of Excel. It's often very manual. It's often very kind of rigorous and relentless. So I think that it's a little bit different from an answer of here's something that will just change your life and automatically solve all your problems to here's a cheat to go apply a framework and bring it to life.
Yeah, I think it's a great one because sometimes we really, first of all, it's our first Excel.
Good.
We have Facebook, we have some very obvious tools, but this is definitely our first Excel. I want to talk about it because it's exactly like you said. You're very aware of innovative. You looked with your product to really make life easier, but sometimes we're forgetting that it's all about make life better or make things that we couldn't have otherwise. And if what works best for you still is Excel, this is what works best. And sometimes we are running so fast after technology that we forget what really works for us. So I love that answer. I want to ask you, is there any person, like a service provider or a mentor or consultant, advertiser, anyone that had a major impact of your success. It can also be a book. However, a person is much more interesting and can help other entrepreneurs as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I'll give credit to a person named Jason Jacobs who, you know, started a company a long time ago and has since sold it. But he once shared with me, and I don't know that it was necessarily his quote, but I'll share it anyway. His quote was, you know, don't waste time convincing non-believers. Spend your time finding believers. And whether or not it was his original quote or not, I'll give him the credit. But he started a company called Runkeeper, and it was focused on kind of obviously, you know, data collection for runners. But I thought it was such a powerful sentiment in terms of kind of really saying, you know, find the time to find that true customer, that believer. It's a lot easier and a lot more fun and a lot more impactful, candidly, than kind of trying to convince non-believers. So I think he shared that with in reference to, you know, securing investors, outside investors for your company. But I think it actually applies even better to customers than it does anyone else.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's, in a way, it's really worth not chasing customers and attracting those who are interested in or who really needs it is exactly the same. So, of course, I love that. You know, there are many things that affect success. However, I want to ask you, what is the one factor that really affected your success? What is the most important factor, your key success factor?
Yeah, you know, I think this is now the perfect time to slot in what I was starting to allude to earlier. You know, I think that all of the rest of our performance as a company, of our execution on our product, a product that I truly believe to be kind of the best on the market, is actually a product of the team here and the culture we've built. And it's kind of this idea that you look forward to coming into work should be the ultimate goal. And whether we've achieved that or not is not for me to answer, but for our team to answer. But in my opinion, it's something that we've either achieved or come very close to. This idea that we have a team that is deeply empathetic, respectful, and enjoys, you know, being around each other means that the rest of the work becomes a lot more of an opportunity than a burden. And because of that, I think it shows in the product that comes out of it, in the messaging that comes out of it, in the customer service that comes out of it, and in the interactions that come out of it, and in the empathy that goes into it. And so if we had to point to one thing that's gotten us to where we are, I wouldn't necessarily call out a tool or a performance technique. What I would call out is the ability for us to identify, retain, and excite a group of really special people who I think mean the world to Gihan and I as the lifeblood of the company.
That's beautiful. My final question, before I ask you what is the best way to get in contact with you, my final question is our mountain question. And since I believe this whole journey of trying to go out there and take ownership of the idea in the mind of the customers, it always reminds me climbing a mountain in a good way. So what I want to ask you is, do you have any stories about mountains? Did you climb any mountain, or do you wish to climb any mountain? Or in other words, do you have any relationships with mountains?
I like that you've broadened the question enough to make sure that there's a definite answer. I do have an answer. So I enjoy climbing mountains, but probably more recreationally than anything that your listeners would find impressive. So at the risk of naming a mountain that's far too small compared to others, I will instead talk about a mountain that I think is just one that I've, like many others, kind of fallen in love with over the past couple of decades. And that's the most obvious mountain out there, which is Mount Everest, and getting to spend time reading, you know, Jon Krakauer's book Into Thin Air, but also several others, including his counterpart Anatoly's rebuttal to the book, which was fascinating, called The Climb. The book and all of the different sentiment and excitement around Everest is just such a special journey to watch, kind of to see 50, you know, plus years ago, when the idea of climbing such a mountain was just an absolute, you know, chaotic disaster, to today when there's, you know, crowds and lines on Everest, is just a real statement on kind of the progress of humanity, and just such a special kind of thing to watch and observe over time. And who knows where we'll be when it comes to Everest 20 years from now, as long as we kind of continue to respect the mountain and nature, hopefully only good things.
Wow. I want to ask you, what is the best way to connect with you for any of our listeners that want to be in touch?
Yeah, so I think email is always easiest. My email address is just Aman, my first name, A-M-A-N, at ministryofsupply.com.
That's great. Of course, we'll have this address as well as any link to the company or to anything that we talked about here today. We'll have all the links on the show notes of this interview in our site, richolmis.com. And Aman, I enjoyed so much talking with
you. Likewise.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for being my guest. It has been a pleasure.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
And for you, our listeners, until the next time, it all goes down to this. You either reach or miss. Keep reaching your goals and vision. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur. You can find all the information, links, and resources that was mentioned at the show in our website, reachormiss.com. See you next week.